God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Bill Federer is a coronavirus survivor, and we're going to be talking to Bill about his bout with COVID-19. This is Pastor Larry. Thank you for being with us. God bless you. I am so glad that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and I hope he's yours as well. This whole mess about the coronavirus pandemic is getting more and more ugly. It could have been avoided. In January of 2018, U.S. officials warned that the Wuhan China Institute of Virology's work on SARS-like coronaviruses in bats, combined with a serious lack of proper safety procedures, could result in human transmission and the possibility of a, quote, future emerging coronavirus outbreak, close quotes. The Washington Post obtained a diplomatic cable proving that U.S. Embassy officials warned their superiors that the lab, which they had visited several times, posed a serious health risk that warranted U.S. intervention. During interactions with scientists at the Wuhan lab, they noted that the new lab had a serious shortage of appropriately trained technicians and investigators that were necessary to operate this high-containment laboratory. The Wuhan Institute of Virology is China's first laboratory to achieve the highest level of international bioresearch safety, known as BSL-4. But its work on bats, led by Xi Zhengli, the Chinese virologist nicknamed Batwoman for her work with that species, is conducted at the lower protection level of BSL-2. No wonder bad things had happened. Welcome to the new normal. The COVID-19 pandemic has done at least two things. First of all, it has reminded us of how close we are to a total loss of our constitutional freedoms. And secondly, it has reminded us of human frailty. You know, some people who have COVID-19 are asymptomatic. They have no symptoms whatsoever. Others suffer horribly. For some people, COVID-19 is a living hell. Bill Federer was one of those individuals who came down with the coronavirus, and we're going to be visiting with him and talk to him of his personal battle with the coronavirus. And I've known Bill for years and years and years, and just to hear for him to relate some of the things he went through just makes me uncomfortable, and I'm sure Bill is going to share with us, and we you know, need to pray for him, pray for his wife. But hi, Bill, thanks so much for being with us once again.
Hey, Larry, great to be with you.
Well, tell me, I think you were in Albany, New York, and that's where you got the virus.
Right. I was speaking at a church Sunday evening and visiting with people at the book table afterwards. And the next day, I'm back at home in Florida, and I get a call from the pastor and said that one person that you spent a lot of time talking to the book table with had it. And sure enough, the next day, I had a fever. And for 3 weeks, I had a fever. I got up to, 102, and then you'd get chills and shivers, and then you'd sweat, and I didn't get tested right away because I was just feeling too bad to do that, and couldn't sleep any at night. So you'd go through the day, and then you'd go through the night, but you just couldn't sleep, and then had a cough, but gradually began to get better, and actually got better, and then you get worse again. So I heard someone talking about, you can tell this is not a normal virus. You know, normally you get a flu virus and you get sick for a couple of days, maybe a little nauseous, and then you recover. But this, it has this dragging on thing. And then with the, being really careful not to cough and sneeze and so forth. But I finally did go in and get tested, which I can't imagine how older people survive. I mean, I'm 62, but we had to finally get a teledoc that I had to talk to on the telephone to schedule a testing, and he got the lab numbers wrong, so we finally had to do that. And then my wife didn't want to drive me because she didn't want to be in the car, so here I am driving to the clinic, and they have the tent set up in the parking lot and like drive through to get tested. And they said, "Are you on the schedule?" And I'm like, "Schedule?" And they go, "Well, you have to be scheduled. You just can't drive through." I'm like, "Okay." So then I had to go to the other tent and get down. And then luckily there was this really nice nurse, and she took a picture of my insurance card. And she registered me as a another patient, and then finally they had to sit in the parking lot for a couple hours, and then finally went through the drive-through tent, and they shoved the Q-tip up my nose, then got the test done. But still, it was like 6 days before I got the results from that. And so I was almost basically over it by the time I got the results. And then it was another 6 days for them to send the medicine for it. And so you can't imagine if somebody that doesn't have the wherewithal that I did, that, which, you know, and again, I'm 62, but if somebody was like in their 80s, how would they know how to do all that?
Well, it would be, you know, you'd want to stay home if you're in your 80s. And like you said, you know, you had to drive yourself. Your wife didn't want to be in the car with you because she didn't want to get it. And I think it really shows that we were, as a nation, totally unprepared. And I know a couple of doctors around here, they were saying that, you know, anybody who wanted to be tested, it would be better just to stay home because, you know, it took so long to get the results. You had a long wait, and it was a very frustrating situation. I think a lot of people were really angry.
Well, and, you know, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. So here you have some of the heads of major software companies and World Health Organization and people helping China to set up a lab in Wuhan. Matter of fact, they even indicted one of the professors at Harvard for helping to set this up. And what did they do in this lab in Wuhan? They studied coronaviruses. And even a Nobel Prize winner said that it leaked from the lab, that there's pieces of it that act like HIV, SARS, MERS, all these different things that are in this coronavirus. And they just happen to have this lab where they were doing this research, and they've had their wet market in Wuhan, where they sell, you know, animals, for centuries. You don't just have this strange virus, you know, with that has never appeared before, appear in the same city where they're doing research on it, and with a lot of these globalists being behind the research. And so a lot of questions need to be answered.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, we've seen how easy it is for deadly pathogens to spread. In, what, a month or so, COVID-19 swept the entire planet. I would think that the idea of closing the border, building a wall, maintaining border security are all very important. We don't want thousands of undocumented aliens coming into America, and it has absolutely nothing to do with racism. You know, when President Trump talks about building a wall and so forth, he's a racist. You know, I know, and you probably know, that there are dirty bombs out there, you know, just an ordinary stick of dynamite, but wrapped with the radioactive material. There are all kinds of poisons that could be put in our water system, and that Pelosi and Schumer would just fight the president and say, no, we're going to have the border open. It's just madness. And that there would be so many Democrats who would back them. More madness. Bill, do you think we've learned anything about building a border wall?
I think that the public is definitely behind it, but for political reasons, two things. One, you see that whoever's the president, when there's a financial panic, you know, in the 1800s, and again, I mentioned Herbert Hoover, they normally do not get reelected. And so when you look at the Democrat Party, they really don't have a candidate. And it's maybe somebody that's on the, you know, border dementia, but if they don't have a candidate, what do they do? Well, you have to build up your opponent's negatives. And again, whoever's president, when there's a financial collapse, usually does not get reelected. You think, well, gee, would they do something global just for an American election? America sets the basic policies for the world. And so, yes, this is a world-impacting position, the U.S. president. Everyone from George Soros to these different globalists that don't like him, and that have been giving money to all kinds of groups. So I do think that the stakes are getting higher and higher. I think if these governors that are shutting down churches and, you know, in Minnesota, and yet keeping open abortion clinics and marijuana shops and liquor stores, imagine if one of those was sitting in the Oval Office as president. They would be more than happy to shut down every church in America, ban, you know, gatherings, even home groups. You know, the King of England did that, Henry VIII. They actually passed laws in England where if you were a a separatist group like the Pilgrims. It was considered an unlawful assembly for you to have people meeting in your home, you know, more than 10 people. Actually, they had it five. If you had five people meeting in your home without approval of the government and you were talking religion, you're all criminals. Right. And that spirit is out there. It hates Christianity. If they could, they'd bulldoze the churches, and like we see in China.
Right. There's kind of a madness. In fact, in China, while people were suffering from the coronavirus and probably didn't have medication, hospital beds, and so forth, the Chinese Communist Party, and I've got photos of it, you can get it on the internet, they were pulling down churches. Can you imagine? You'd think they would put that on hold, at least for a while. And then last week, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, you know, he said, we haven't had a single coronavirus death. Well, he's right, because if you have the coronavirus in North Korea, you die of a bullet in the head. You know, so it's so absurd that there's this hostility against Christianity. And then what does Kim Jong-un do last week? I think it was last week, maybe the week before, fires a whole bunch of missiles into the ocean. I mean, what's wrong with these people? You think it would be helping his people? Don't they have any compassion for other human beings? Obviously not. They hate God and they want to destroy the testimony of Jesus Christ.
Well, and weakness invites aggression.
Yes.
That's the law of nature. You have some, you know, wolves or coyotes, and there's, you know, strong, healthy animals, they'll stay away. But if there's a weak animal, you know, the hyenas, they all gather around and attack. And it's the same way politically and globally. You know, Islam has a certain aspect of that, that when they sense the non-Muslim countries are weak, they take that as an indicator from Allah they're supposed to attack. But you see that throughout history. You know, the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre in France, there was the Catherine de' Medici queen, you know, the Mary Queen of Scots, you know, mother-in-law, and she didn't like the Huguenot Protestants. And so first the Protestants were relegated to certain areas of the country, and then they couldn't worship, you know, but certain times of day, and then they couldn't travel in certain areas, and they were limited. And the Christians just kept saying, okay, we'll just adjust to this new restriction and adjust to the new and adjust to the new, until pretty soon they pulled the chains across the streets in the city of Paris so the carriages couldn't ride down them. And they filled up the River Seine with all these dead bodies of these Protestant Huguenots. And then they went around and did the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre. And so we see that just by, you turn the other cheek as an individual. But when we as adults are wanting to preserve freedoms for our children, we need to stand up and have backbone and say, no, this far and no further. You know, Patrick Henry made that observation. He says, meek and mild religion teaches us the admirable maxim of turning the other cheek and forgiving and repenting, forgetting. He says, we must do as individuals, but not as a country. As a country, we must stand up and defend our rights. He says, observations of this kind are difficult, nevertheless necessary.
Well, I think that's a very, very helpful quotation, because I think the Lord Jesus Christ has been misunderstood many times. You know, if you talk about the military, you know, we need a military, and I don't believe in using the military in aggression. That would be wrong. I believe we have a Second Amendment, and I wouldn't want to use my weapon to attack somebody, but with the military, we need to defend ourselves. And I don't see that Jesus Christ is against that. I think in the Sermon on the Mount, he was speaking to his people, to kingdom people, but he certainly was not speaking to admirals, generals, and heads of state. I don't think he's, you know, I think we have a wrong idea. We think that Christians are a bunch of wimps. We're not. And I thank God for the fact that, like the Benhams, they're standing up and they're taking a stand, because there's so much that's in peril.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Jesus's first public sermon in his hometown ended with them wanting to push him off a cliff. Jesus was always confronting the prideful. He was gracious and forgiving to the humble, but to the prideful, one time he was invited to a Pharisee's house for dinner, and the Pharisee noticed that Jesus did not wash his hands. And Jesus tells him, you Pharisees are more concerned about the outside of the cup and not the inside, and begins to criticize him. And then a lawyer says, well, Jesus, by saying that, you're insulting us lawyers. And he goes, well, let me tell you about you lawyers. You get burdens on people too heavy to carry. Don't even lift a finger. And he just goes after him. And then the chapter ends. And you ever wonder if they got around to eating dinner? It's like the Jesus that we serve had backbone. And he stood up to unrighteousness. And he called them out. He was forgiving and to the humble. But he would not hesitate for a moment to criticize those that were engaging in unrighteousness.
Right, absolutely. I'm thinking of the healing of the man with the withered hand. That was certainly not a life-threatening situation. He could have waited a day, but Jesus pushed the issue. He wanted to make an issue of it. He knew what they were thinking. They were looking at them. And then Mark chapter 3, I believe it's verse 5, Jesus looked around at them with anger. There is a righteous anger. You know, Paul says in Ephesians 4:26, I believe it is, be angry and sin not. Don't let it become resentful, but there is a place for a righteous indignation. Well, Bill, we're out of time. We're so happy that you are still in the land of the living. We thank you for our chat about COVID-19, and we're looking forward to seeing you in Columbus, Ohio in September. So, brother, thank you so much, and God bless you.
Well, Larry, bless you and all of Southwest Radio Church and all those in the listening audience, and I look forward to seeing them there. And also, if they're interested in the books that we're offering, I think they'll find them fascinating.
Yes, they're both good. I know we're especially loving Who is the King in America? And Who are the Counselors to the King? Well, Matthew's going to come to the mic and tell our listeners of our special offer for this show.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the book, Who is the King in America? Have you ever wondered what is the most popular form of government? Since around 3000 BC, the world has been mostly ruled by kings. You can have a copy of this extraordinary DVD for a gift of $20 in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our call center at 1-800-652-1144. The operators will be happy to help you. If you'd rather write and place your order, just send that letter to Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And of course, you can order this book and any of our materials on our website at swrc.com. We also have the book with the same title, Who is the King in America? The book is for a gift of $20. Better yet, get both the DVD and the book for a gift of $35. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address to write is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
On Friday, April 17th, Professor Johann Giesecke gave his analysis of lockdown policies around the globe and what he perceives as their weaknesses in tackling COVID-19. Professor Giesecke is currently an advisor to the Swedish government and was the first chief scientist of the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control.
The professor affirmed that the measures we should take against the pandemic should be evidence-based. And when you start looking around for the measures that are being taken now by different countries, you find that very few of them have a shred of evidence supporting them.
The only measure we know will work is washing your hands, which is good for you and good for others when you are in an epidemic. But the rest, he said, like border closures, school closures, social distancing, there's almost no science behind most of these, the professor argued. In the long run, most democratized nations will have similar outcomes with regard to deaths, lockdown or not. Lockdowns, he argued, are unsustainable and could have serious political consequences. He referenced Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who recently made a controversial power grab, citing the virus as justification.
Professor Giesecke said that Sweden should have banned visitors earlier. Many of the people working in nursing homes are from other countries. They are refugees or asylum seekers in Sweden, and they may not be fluent in Swedish. It just adds to the confusion.
Well, Marvin, I want to summarize some of the very important points that Professor Giesecke made, and I think they're very significant. UK lockdown policies and the lockdown policies of other European countries are not evidence-based. Lockdown policy should be for the elderly or for those with health problems. The Imperial College paper that set the pessimistic tone of the way many nations are handling the COVID-19 problem was not very well written. Professor Giesecke is surprised that it had such a worldwide influence that set a negative tone for the worldwide response. At least 50% of the population of both the UK and Sweden will be shown to have already had the disease when mass antibody testing becomes available.
I think Professor Giesecke is articulating points that are being made by more and more people. The lockdown policies that are being practiced are extreme and are based on initial pessimistic projections of the number of deaths anticipated from the coronavirus.
The blue logo of China's state-run construction company looms over major construction sites from Nigeria to Ethiopia. China has taken advantage of the urbanization push across Africa, offering infrastructure for airports, hospitals, and rail stations. It is part of their plan for world domination. That opens the doors for profit-seeking businessmen and Chinese state employees. The Migration Policy Institute estimates that about 1 million Chinese migrants are on the African continent. At least 350,000 of them reside in South Africa.
The migrant population has created a unique evangelism opportunity for Christian missionaries and Chinese converts to Christianity. The South African Chinese Outreach Network, known as SACON, has made outreach to Chinese nationals in Africa their target group. People from South Africa wanted to go to China to share the word of God, but China is now at their doorstep.
Carl Teichert, an American missionary who leads the South African Chinese Outreach Network, came to South Africa in 1997 with his wife Jenny and their four children. He had worked as an engineer for the city of Los Angeles, California for 14 years before their involvement in inner-city ministry sparked a desire for a more global outreach. The couple now work as missionaries as they help with church planning and leadership development.
Teicher continues to develop outreach ideas. Their approach includes speaking at local churches to encourage ministry and connecting with Chinese converts who can help bridge language and cultural barriers. The network now includes about 30 Chinese leaders across the region.
The blue logo of China's state-run construction company looms over major construction sites from Nigeria to Ethiopia. China has taken advantage of the urbanization push across Africa, offering infrastructure for airports, hospitals, and rail stations. It is part of their plan for world domination. That opens the doors for profit-seeking businessmen and Chinese state employees. The Migration Policy Institute estimates that about 1 million Chinese migrants are on the African continent. At least 350,000 of them reside in South Africa.
The migrant population has created a unique evangelism opportunity for Christian missionaries and Chinese converts to Christianity. The South African Chinese Outreach Network, known as SACON, has made outreach to Chinese nationals in Africa their target group. People from South Africa wanted to go to China to share the word of God, but China is now at their doorstep.
Carl Teichert, an American missionary who leads the South African Chinese Outreach Network, came to South Africa in 1997 with his wife Jenny and their four children. He had worked as an engineer for the city of Los Angeles, California for 14 years before their involvement in inner-city ministry sparked a desire for a more global outreach. The couple now work as missionaries as they help with church planning and leadership development.
Teicher continues to develop outreach ideas. Their approach includes speaking at local churches to encourage ministry and connecting with Chinese converts who can help bridge language and cultural barriers. The network now includes about 30 Chinese leaders across the region.
(laughs) An Israeli coronavirus drug that claims to have a 100% success rate among severely ill patients is being tested in the United States for the first time.
The trial comes after Pluristem Therapeutics, Inc., a biotech company based in Haifa, reports that 7 patients who were at a high risk of death due to respiratory failure survived after receiving the medication.
The patients were approved for treatment under the Compassionate Use Program and exhibited respiratory failure requiring intubation in the ICU. 4 of the patients had further complications due to multi-system organ failure, including heart and kidney failure. The 7 patients were treated with Pluristem's allogenic placental expanded cells. Essentially, these cells can suppress or reverse the dangerous overactivation of the immune system that causes death in many coronavirus patients.
Pluristem uses donated placentas at the time of delivery of healthy, full-term babies from healthy women under 35 years old, undergoing an elective cesarean section.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the book, Who is the King in America? Have you ever wondered what is the most popular form of government? Since around 3000 BC, the world has been mostly ruled by kings. You can have a copy of this extraordinary DVD for a gift of $20 in the United States and $40 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our call center at 1-800-652-1144. The operators will be happy to help you. If you'd rather write and place your order, just send that letter to Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And of course, you can order this book and any of our materials on our website at swrc.com. We also have the book with the same title, Who is the King in America? The book is for a gift of $20. Better yet, get both the DVD and the book for a gift of $35. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. And the website is swrc.com. When we offer an item for $30, we do not get to keep $30. We have to purchase these items we offer, which cost us about half of that. Then we have to pay the radio stations to play our program. We know you can get these items we offer cheaper at someplace else. But the little money we do get to keep goes for purchasing new items, paying radio stations, wages, utility bills, computers, and all the rest that keeps this ministry on the air. So when you look for a cheaper price online, remember the great program you just heard and say to yourself, I'll support Southwest Radio Church because I enjoy their messages on Bible prophecy and Bible teaching. Thank you for joining us today. Join us again on Monday when we begin a new series here on the Watchmen on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Ministries.